Hari O Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunastu Sahabhi Yantara Bhavahari Tejasvi Navati Tamas Oma Vidvishavahai Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so page 9. Maitreya continued, although the queen had no son, after eating that food which had the power to produce a male child, she became pregnant by her husband, and in due course of time gave birth to a son. Footnote 3. Among the 10 kinds of purificatory processes, one is pumsavanam, in which the wife is offered some prasad, or remnants of food stuff offered to Lord Vishnu, so that her sexual intercourse with her husband may conceive a child. The boy was born partially in the dynasty of irreligion. His grandfather was death personified, and the boy grew up as his follower. He became a greatly irreligious person. Footnote 4. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur renders verse 39 as follows. The male child took after his maternal grandfather, death, who appeared as a portion of the Dharma. Because of this, he was irreligious. Remember that this dynasty before, you had all the, you know, irreligion and, you know, envy and death and fear and all that whole line. So his mother is from that line. And then because of that, he took on the qualities of the mother, which took on the qualities of the father. Right? Yes.
We see that if he was born from from what was earned from the sacrifice.
Right.
So how could that be? Isn't that auspicious? And if so, why did the Anga was not supposed to be his wife?
Who else is he supposed to give it to? Right? So it's going to go to his wife. And the point was is that she's not that qualified. Just because of the aspect of being in the dynasty of irreligious. And because of that, then it's causing a problem. It's not necessarily that it would happen, but it's one of those things that could happen. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, somebody has some recessive gene that it can do something funny. You can end up with a disease or not, or, you know, everybody else in your family has, you know, blue eyes, you have brown eyes, or something, you know, just something very different than everybody else. So some kind of, so it could happen, it might not happen. So the point is, so if he's there and it's so nice, she must have been, as a wife. But the problem is that the son, they take on the qualities of her father. Which he did. You know? So that's the difference. And Prabhupada explains. That was only about 3 kilometers away. The mother's child, Sunita, was the daughter of death personified. Generally, the daughter receives the qualifications of her father, and the son acquires those of the mother. So according to the axiomatic truth that things equal to the same thing are equal to one another, the child born of King Anga became the follower of his maternal grandfather. That means, in other words, that the daughter is like the father, the son is like the mother. Right? So since that mother is the common principle there, then that means formula, then the son is like the grandfather. Right? Prabhupada pointing out that that's the math that's being used here. Yes.
The
sacrifice that Putra Kameshti Yajna, I just start with the right letter, right? Then is to get a son. It's not specifically the quality of the son. That's going to be dependent upon the parents. This is just makes it that having a son is a possibility. So in other words, by some kind of activity in the previous life, he didn't have the karma to have a son. Right? So then by having the Putra Kameshti Yajna that the sages did, then he has the qualification he'll get a son. Right? So they cleared that karma. But the nature of what the father is, the mother is, that's a whole different thing. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, you have a restaurant and somehow or another it's been shut down by some guy in a suit somewhere with a briefcase, right? But you have some contacts and they're able to get the restaurant open. Okay? So, that, you know, so someone walks out of your restaurant in the street outside, they saw rats, so they figure there must be rats in the restaurant, that's why they're there. They tell somebody who tells somebody, your restaurant gets blown. Right? So, right? So, he gets it open. Okay? So now, what kind of cooking will happen in the restaurant? Will it be according to the power of the person who got the ban removed on the restaurant? No, it'll be according to the cook. You understand? So, the Brahman is by the power they can overcome that sin of not having a child. But the quality of the child, that will be up to the parents. Yes, but it is of a, you're inviting from a better quality of soul. See, if there's no Garbhodan, it's potpourri. Right? If it's Garbhodan, then it's going to be someone who has that connection with the Vedic line or with a pure situation. You know, it's just like this. Let us say, okay, not necessarily a nice example, but it may work. Okay? No, maybe I should. Train station and there's a waiting room. Okay, so they have the general waiting room and they have the first class waiting room. Okay? Now the general waiting room, now a gentleman may or may not be comfortable waiting in. But everybody else there is quite happy. There's some place that's out of the way, it's inside. You put your stuff down and right? The gentlemen prefer a better quality waiting room. You understand? So that's the difference. Whether you get the general class or you get the more cultured. That's what you're choosing from. And now, who's in that waiting room? Now, that's another thing. So according to consciousness, then it's just the strata that you're functioning in the soul. But the range within that is still going to be by the consciousness. Right? So one shouldn't worry that the sacrifice doesn't have potency, because the main point of the potency is to overcome the sin of not being able to have a child. That was it. Then that the king is doing in such regulated fashion, you know it's going to be proper. But it's, so he's a follower of irreligion. He's not a ghost or something else, right? You know what I'm saying? Because at least the dynasty of irreligion, you know, it's some particular line, you know, it has its own dignity, you know, envy, jealousy, you know, fear, death, you know, I mean, you know, it's a particular line. You know, there's not, you know, not stupidity and idiot and, you know, wastrel and like this. They're not in that line. Does that make sense? So like that. So there is something of higher, because you see, he can manage. It doesn't say that Vena can't do the functions of a king. Right? But what he can't do is do the functions of a king in support of Dharma. So it doesn't say he's a bad manager, it just says he's irreligious. Does that make sense? So that's why it's mixed. So you have the quality that, according to sacrifice, all these things are going on, the king is very pious, so you get someone who technically is a manager. But because of the influence coming from the grandfather's side, then there's the irreligious side where he's not going to want to perform those things in pursuance of Dharma, just in pursuance of his own interest. Does that make sense? You know, so we can see Duryodhana on one level is a step above that. Because he wasn't in general like that, he was only specifically towards the Pandavas. But, in effect, it's about the same. Right? So the difference is Krishna's not there, there's not a particular pastime, it's just his devotee. So to remove the devotee from the material entanglement, then this arrangement was made. But because Krishna was there to lessen the burden of the earth, therefore then Duryodhana was not killed by the Savior. Otherwise, technically, he could have been. But he was nice to, you know, certain people and this and that. Those will be appreciated. Like that. So, does that work? So it's just a matter of separating what exactly does what. You know? Is that any good? So let's say it's like, okay, let's try it up. This one might work even better. Okay, let us say you have a famous cook. Okay? He has a really nice kitchen. Okay? But there's no ingredients inside. So, what can he cook? Not much. You know, he may make a gourmet can of beans, but it's still a can of beans. Okay, and then someone can say, but he's this famous cook. How can he just cook like this? So that's the kitchen and the arrangements, but you still have the ingredients. So therefore you have the sacrifice, but you still have the ingredients. So the idea is the ingredients will be at their best. So the effect of the king and his wife, that will be at his best. But still, you're still dealing with the king and his wife. Is that what you're saying? Okay. According to Smriti Shastra, a child generally follows the principles of his maternal uncle's house. Narana, Matula, Karma, means that a child generally follows the qualities of his maternal family. You know, they're talking about the boy, so the girl would be the opposite. Right? If the maternal family is very corrupt or sinful, the child, even though born of a good father, becomes a victim of the maternal family. Right? Because the father may be good, but it'll come from the qualities of the mother. So even if the mother's good, the point is it is her father good. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. So generally take there. So you can generally get an idea by looking at the brothers-in-law. Right? The wife's sisters. I mean brothers. Because they'll take on the quality of the mother. And so that will generally give an indication of what's the line like. Right? Because the nature of the house generally takes on the refinement is from the mother. The father will set the general kind of environment. But the quality of that will be the mother. Does that make sense? So you can get an idea from there. But then more specific, it'll be, look at her father. Right? So you can see, what is her father? What is her brother? Right? And then, of course, we have, we're devotees. So then that's another thing. Right?
Can we get on that path?
Which path? Of being devotees? It basically means if you're Krishna conscious, it works. That's the whole point of Dharmadan and all that.
We do, yes, for that. What about the father? If we have first generation, means our parents are not exactly in any Dharmadan, or less than anything close to that.
No Bodhan, right?
So our kids...
No, that's why Prabhupada says third generation. Because the second generation, they're connected with the first. Yeah. But I'm saying the second has the association with the first. But now the second, the Krishna conscious culture, is their culture. So then it'll be stronger, though they will have those experiences and some scars that are there from the parents. Right, so then their position will be better. So the third generation, then that will be better. Because now, the third generation, their grandparents are devotees. Though they're first generation, but they're devotees. Right? And like that, it comes down. So, you know, as it goes, fourth generation will be better. Fifth generation, then that will be, you know, something else. But already, Prabhupada's pointing out that third generation is already something unique and special. So that's the whole idea as it goes, is that all these cultural things will become easier as it goes. What now is a, you know, 2-week discussion with the first generation is a 5-minute discussion with the second generation. Like that, because it's just obvious. Because there's no impressions to fight against it, right? Because first generation has been born and bred in I'm the controller and enjoyer. And then there's certain value systems of how I control and enjoy. So, if there's any point in the Vedic system that competes with that, that will always be a point of contention. Right? You know, so different individuals have different places where it's a problem. Right? But the nice thing about the Vedic system is, if one's committed to it, one can still find a place in there because there's all these different ranges of how you can situate yourself, depending upon the values and everything like that. So the Veda covers it. If you can appreciate it, then even if one has something, if it's in the common area. You know, say, let's say one is born of, just to be extreme here, Jewish, atheistic Jewish intellectuals. Both parents are professors at the university, they're both atheists, and they're Jewish. Right? You're not going to get much more wild than that. You know? So, and they're Ashkenazis, of course, right? They're not going to be Sephardis, you know? Okay? And ideally some Germanic kind of background, because that makes them a little bit more rough and tough, right? You know, on the atheist. Okay. Now, the point is, but they're intellectuals. And their child most likely will be intellectual. Now, the child, even though he's from that kind of background, but if they have that connection or that faith in the Vedic, then there's a nice position within the Vedic and the Brahminical culture, doing the Brahminical duties. So that's the whole point. First generation doesn't have to actually have much of a problem. They can have. That's what we're pointing out. First will generally have a tendency to have more of a problem with the Vedic system than the second. You know what I'm saying? The first, it's a matter of, you know, is it even real or not? Is it something to follow or not? Is it valuable or not? The second, it's their culture. It's just whether they want to make the effort or not. That's the difference. Right? So, if one takes it, then it'll work very nicely. And so then that person who's taken it nicely, that their children, that second generation, that's technically the second generation we're talking about. Now that second generation now following nicely, they have children. That'll be the third generation that Prabhupada's describing. Right? Otherwise, then you get one and a half, you know, then maybe you get to two, then, you know, 2 1/4, you know, or whatever it is, and then finally it gets there. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of how much that commitment is there in Krishna consciousness, one, but also within the culture. Because in Krishna consciousness, if one has that faith and doesn't have faith in the culture, then you could still get by. It'll be rough, it'll be difficult, but you could get by. But if you want to see the culture manifest the way it's being discussed here, then one has to accept that culture, and then it works. Because it's being that the culture is eternal, it's always alive, it always works. It's not that it only works 5,000 years ago, or 100 years ago when Prabhupada was here, or it only works in India. No, it works anywhere, because the universe belongs to Krishna. Yes?
Say that the
of the mother. Of the mother and then the grandfather.
Yeah. That means the karma.
No, not the karma. It means the qualities of them, the nature of them. Just like, let's say, the father is the kshatriya, then his daughter will have that kshatriya nature. Right? Does that make sense? Now, let's say she marries a Brahmin. Okay? But the son will have the nature of the mother and be a kshatriya. Not a Brahmin like the father. But he'll have the spirit of the father. So you have the spirit of the father, the nature of the mother. For the girl, it's the opposite. She'll have the nature of the father, the spirit of the mother. You understand?
It all makes sense.
It all makes sense. Okay, everyone's calculating. Oh, no.
5 years of listening.
Huh?
No. 5 years of listening. That makes sense.
And it finally clicked.
That's why I'm like that.
Yeah.
So. Like that.
Huh? So that's just the conditioning. So the point is if one understands that, one just works with that and uses it in Krishna service. So that's our point, is it doesn't matter what it is, but it should be used in its purified state. Because whatever it is, it has a pure form. So that's what you have to look at, is that, okay, then in the Father, then is there, so there may be impure and all these things, but what's the actual underlying nature? So it may be there in an impure state because of not being devotees. But what is the nature itself? You know, let's say, okay, person, let's say a businessman, or is he charitable? How is he, you know, with the community? Is he supportive? Is he self-centered? These kind of things are what's underlying, you know, the nature. And then it's a matter of, okay, is it, you know, what's the pure level of purity? So how much piety is there? How less? Right? And a tendency towards piety or not. So these are the things underlying that you'll see. Now as a devotee, then naturally one's working at a purified level and it comes up very quickly. So whatever's there, it can be brought to a very pure state. So that's why no matter what the background, it can always come to something very nice. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, your father is, you know, Pretty Boy Floyd or something. So then you'll be good at, you know, the daughter will be very good at convincing others of her viewpoint. You know, so maybe she's convincing you that you should give to this charity and stuff, but she'll be convincing, right? She'll have that commitment. So. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so like you see, just as an example, Elizabeth, right, the first, who's her father, right, Henry VIII, right. So he was of all the English kings, he's one of the few that one people know about, right. Well, most likely for his particular dealings with his wives, but you know. Funny, he didn't actually cut off that many heads. The first one he divorced, the last one outlived him. And I can't remember if all of them in between got their heads lopped off. If they did, then that's 4 out of 6. That would definitely set a pattern. But so then, he being such a powerful personality, we see Elizabeth was a powerful personality. Right? So whatever his religious convictions were, he could get it done and effective. So he created the Church of England. And so when she wanted to stop all the fighting between the Catholics and the Protestants, she could do it. No one else before that could. Right? Is that what you're saying? You know, at the same time as you see her sister, stepsister, was it Mary, Bloody Mary, then she also had that determination religion. Just as he established the Church of England, she was committed to wiping it out and killing anybody connected with it. Right? So they have that kind of strength, because it's getting it from the Father. Right? But the Son was not very strong. Because he took on the quality of the mother. But you see, is that Elizabeth? Yeah, no, it goes that way. Okay. I think we got the point. Right? Okay.
How is that the mother gives of the daughter, and then by the
name? Mother.
Gender.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now you understand why I kind of finessed the question.
Okay, yeah. So, gender of her daughter, but the name.
The mother is the gender of the daughter. One hopes so. I mean, see, it's like this. In general places in the world, that would be the way it is. If you're in San Francisco, it's not necessarily so.
But in general, according to the
Catholic
culture, it's not that.
No, I'm just saying, like, let's say you have a San Francisco marriage there. You may have two men or two women. So if it's two women, then generally the daughter will be the nature of the father. Unless, of course, it's a boy and he's gay and he identifies as that, or he's a cross-dresser, like that. But if the parents are both men, then the daughter will not have the same gender as the mother in the relationship, even though, because they're a man, but they're basically kind of like the wife in the relationship. But the gender will be different.
Normal case.
Okay, so you're talking about a non-San Francisco arrangement. Okay. So, I don't quite get the question. So, is the daughter the same gender as the mother?
Yes.
Or that you're starting with that?
No, okay.
Are you saying what's it? Use your words.
Okay, who is stronger? The moment of conception
For the gender of the child, who's stronger, the mother or the daughter?
So you're
talking about husband and wife.
Yes.
And what decides whether it will be a daughter or a son? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
You write it down.
Do we need to bring in, like, aliens here or something, you know? Those from the 80s. Okay, so we have, we're discussing husband and wife, right?
Yes.
And they're producing a child, right? And you're talking about the mentality or the strength of the mother and father.
Gender.
Well, I hope that the husband is male and the wife is female. Because we're just talking this, because the point is from this you can get any kind of combination you want. But the point is you have to understand the original formula to use it.
Yeah.
You understand? That's why we're talking in heterosexual context here. Not that it won't have effect if it was not, but it's okay, go ahead.
A normal situation, mother and father.
Okay.
So who is stronger in the moment of conception? Is it the mother? One daughter,
right.
Father, one son.
Right.
So my question is, why is the daughter come because the mother is stronger? What
happened
the mentality of the father?
Because that's just the way the mentality works. See, because you have the gross body and you have the subtle body. So one produces the gross body, the other produces the subtle. Otherwise, how do you get something complete, right? Two gross bodies or something. You have Siamese twins with no brains or something, no subtle body or something. Okay? Like that. So you have to have both. Okay. According to Vedic civilization, therefore, before the marriage takes place, an account is taken of both the boys' and girls' families. If according to astrological calculation the combination is perfect, then marriage takes place. Sometimes, however, there is a mistake and family life becomes frustrating. So in other words, when they're looking at it, sometimes there may be something not seen, some yoga, some other thing like that. So that's why it's just, you look at it nicely, it's pretty straightforward. But the idea is that it should be, what's the combination between the families? Because generally what it's looked at is, no, it's up to the individuals, all this, you know, they're restricted by the families, this and that. That's only if it's not applied properly. The point is you want family life to go nicely. Will there be good combination? Will there be good children? Right? Because the whole, that means family life is the whole package. Right? And you're basically going to be connected with it for a few years. Right? So you want to make sure it's right. So the Vedic was just looking at, just like, let's say someone wants to buy a car. So just go out in the lot and just look at anything. Oh, that looks nice and shiny. I'll take that one. Yeah, but then you have to just go into the right one. You know, if outside it says, you know, that Lamborghini or Ferrari or Mercedes, then it's okay. You walk in and point to anyone you want, it works.
So you don't go to the pre-owned
car. No, that kind of parking lot, then you have to be very careful.
Unless it's a
vintage. Yeah, okay, that's unless it's vintage. You'll have to take her sometime. Okay. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that the families would look at these things, and then if there's there's options, then the child points out, okay, I'll take that one. Just like with Prabhupada's family, they worked out that there were two girls who would be good. So you show, you can, this girl or that girl. Right? So like that, there can be those options. But the point is it should be within. It's like what we were saying before about the head of state. You know, it should be that the head of state is the option for it. It's someone who is going to be good. There may be a few options, but it should be all of the options are as good. They may have different flavors, different this, that, but they're all good. So in the same way as the options for marriage, they should all be good. So you should see that the families match, the natures of the families and the parents, and you just see all these things. Right? So in other words, in here, when you're looking at, when you're looking at the family, right? And say the boy's family, when they go to visit the girl's family, then they'll be looking at this and that, but somebody should be watching the uncles and the grandfather, you know, and the father and these kind of things and what their nature is. Well, if it's the other way, they'll be watching the opposite.
That's why I don't understand how they end up.
Because Prabhupada said it, sometimes there's a mistake. Sometimes, however, there's a mistake because there's something underlying that nobody looks at.
If she's the daughter of this person, if I listen, pretty okay,
so
you don't need an astrological chart to be done.
Why they've made this arrangement is not actually our business. Just like, let us take here. We take Mayapur. Okay, now there's so many here, hundreds of families are here. Why they're married, what's the arrangement, that's not what we're going to look at. We're just going to look at what's going to be the effect. Because you can't really look at all that because it's not part of the process. Right? But from this, then we get an understanding that if you have an option, don't marry your son to somebody that is related to death personified. You know? And ideally, you even avoid the bigger family of those who are descendants of your religion. Right? Because it has effects. So that's why these things are there. So it's about character, not other things. Right? People looking at what they physically look like, or their money, or social position, like that. No, it's about the character. That the character matches. Now, if you notice, you know, within the line of irreligion, then death personified, you know, who he's married, you know, then it comes out very nicely. It works very well for them. So they're, whatever you're saying, they're, you know, how you say, arranging the marriages perfectly. You know? So it's like death, I think, meets married fear. You know, like that. So that works really well. You know what I'm saying? Because if, let's say, they go out for a program, right? You know, somebody's dying. So the father is quite, you know, comfortable in that environment. And the person, because he's dying, he's fearful. The mother's also happy. So they're a great couple.
But they usually aren't invited.
But it doesn't mean they're not a good couple. We're talking about if they're a good couple or not. Just like we were talking about whether the other ones were a good couple or not. Like that. So it's very easy. You know, just strike that family off the list. Not that somebody from the family you'd like to invite, but you don't want all the rest of them coming, so now what do? Right? Isn't that more difficult? It's easy. Just, you know, this family, we don't invite. This family, we invite. But if you have someone that's mixed, so that's the whole point. It's very nicely defined. Okay. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse as follows. Because faults on the mother's side, he was irreligious, but because of arising from sacrifice to Vishnu caused by the father's maternal detachment, he became beneficial to the father since he gave rise to Prithu and thereby increased the fame of the family. Right? So there's where your effective sacrifice is coming. Because the direct nature of him gave rise to his bad behavior, but because of the sacrifice and coming from his father's side, right? And that side, when they churn from his body Prithu Maharaj, then they churn that high grade element. Right? Otherwise, one would say, why would they use Venu is bad, why churn anything from his body? But because they're churning from him, from that element of sacrifice, and what's from the father's side. Is that what it is? Okay, footnote 5. The Padma Purana explains that as a child, Vena's mother used to imitate her father's service. One day when she went to the forest to play with her friends, she saw the handsome Gandharva, Shushanka, performing penance by meditation on goddess Saraswati in order to become perfect in the art of music. Sunita began to annoy him, but Shushanka bore her torments patiently. The next day she struck Shushanka with a whip. The Gandharva rose, shivering with pain, and cursed Sunita. When you marry, your son will be extremely sinful and will disregard the demigods and brahmanas. As a result, cruel Vena was born through Sunita's marriage to King Anga. So therefore, have somebody check in the girl's closet. And if there's a large whip there, then maybe you should give it a miss. Right? Unless you're on a ranch and she, you know, moves the cows and everything around, and then it's okay. After fixing his bow and arrow, the cruel boy used to go to the forest and unnecessarily kill innocent deer. Right? So it's not a matter of, it's about culling the deer or about the challenge of the deer. Because the point is not you're trying to kill the deer. You're trying to get, because deer, how they run very fast, and they also have the ability to change direction immediately. They're not like a buffalo that just keeps going in a straight line. They can run and bounce in almost the opposite direction. They just have that ability. So they're going to be very difficult to shoot. So having challenged the deer, then you're going to try to shoot it. But here he's unnecessarily killing, so there was no advantage. It wasn't that you're developing any skill, it wasn't any benefit for the forest, it wasn't, you know, like that. And as soon as he came, all the people would cry, "Here comes cruel Vena. Here comes cruel Vena." The boy was so cruel that while playing with young boys of his age, he would kill them mercilessly, as if they were animals meant for slaughter. After seeing the cruel and merciless behavior of his son, Vena, King Anga punished him in different ways to reform him, but he was unable to bring him to the path of gentleness. He thus became greatly aggrieved. The king thought to himself, persons who have no son are certainly fortunate. They must have worshipped the Lord in their previous lives so that they would not have to suffer the unbearable unhappiness caused by a bad son. A sinful son causes a person's reputation to vanish. His irreligious activities at home cause irreligion and quarrel amongst everyone. And this creates only endless anxiety because he's behaving badly, but there's still going to be attachments, affections, and all these things. So then the whole family is going to be arguing over it. Right? So then it's going to be a whole problem. So the basic point is better no son than a bad son.
Right? You have son before.
Sorry?
Yeah, you got it.
That was specifically because the Brahmin said it was required. You know, I mean, he would as a king, as a grihastha, he would be attempting to have children. But the effect was not happening. And so when his yajna wasn't working, that's because he didn't have a son. Because the king, it should be that the generation is going to be carried on. Therefore, you have the son so that can happen. Right? So that would be complete. Your duties would be complete. Does that make sense? So, therefore, for that, it wasn't that he was out of attachment he was looking for the son. Because of his detachment in the process, therefore, Prithu Maharaj was there. So his grandson was the effect of his nature. The son was an effect of her nature, but the grandson was the effect of his nature. Right? So,
This is not according to what we just discussed before.
Why not?
Because the grandson should anyway take the nature of the mother.
But that would be if there's a daughter.
Son. The grandson, Vena. Because he didn't have parents because they joined.
Yes, so therefore there's a combination in Vena of the qualities of the mother and the qualities of the father. So or as that we said, the spirit of the father quality. So that what is there, the effect of the sacrifice and that detachment of the father and all those things that were of value and pious, that's what was churned and was brought out as Prithu Maharaj. Is that
okay.
You sure? Okay. Okay. We'll stop there. Okay. So continuing with the king. Who, if he's considerate and intelligent, would desire such a worthless son? Such a son is nothing but a bond of illusion for the living entity, and he makes one's home miserable. Then the king thought, a bad son is better than a good son, because a good son creates an attachment for home, whereas a bad son does not. A bad son creates a hellish home from which an intelligent man naturally becomes very easily detached. So he's first looking at it from the social. Is that who would want a bad son? Then he's looking for the spiritual. Why? He says, well, the bad son just makes it not no interest in spiritual, in material life. You know, so it's just up to the, you know, what the individual is interested in. I mean, you can also have a good son and, you know, progress as long as he's also very spiritual. But the problem is the attachments. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 46, according to Vedic civilization, this giving up of home by vanaprastha and sannyas is compulsory. But people who are so attached to their homes that even up to the point of death, they do not like to retire from home life. King Anga, therefore, thinking in terms of detachment, accepted his bad son as a good impetus for detachment from home life. He therefore considered his bad son his friend because he was helping him become detached from his home. Ultimately, one has to learn how to detach oneself from attachment to material life. Therefore, if a bad son, by his bad behavior, helps a household to go away from home, it is a boon. So he's looking at it from the position of what is the benefit, right? So therefore, since that's the situation, right? In other words, no one would want a bad son. But since he has one, then he sees the good side of it, that it'll be easy to become detached. Well, if you have a good son, then they'll make the family life and everything go smoothly. So each has their advantage. So whichever one you have, then you look at that advantage. So he had a bad son, so therefore he looks at the advantage of one can become detached. Yes.
So we'd be like, okay, the father abandoned the bad son?
It depends on what he does. Yeah, so then that's a waste of time. That's a waste of time. The point is here, he's 50, and now he's going to go, because the idea is the son should grow up to become the king, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to work out good. Because you see, when he leaves, they make Vena the king. So that means he was of age and of training. So that's the whole point, is it's not that one's younger and one is frustrated, so one leaves and then goes off and finds another family. That's not of importance. Because the point is being in the material world is never great anyway. It's just a matter of whether you learn it more directly or indirectly, or sooner or later. The point is to figure out that the material world doesn't have a great advantage. Maitreya continued, thinking like that, King Anga could not sleep at night. He became completely indifferent to household life. Once, therefore, in the dead of night, he got up from bed and left Vena's mother, his wife, who was sleeping deeply. He gave up all attraction for his greatly opulent kingdom, and unseen by anyone, he very silently gave up his home and opulence and proceeded towards the forest. So this is, you're giving up everything and you're going to stay in that position. Does that make sense? That has some meaning. In other words, family life for a devotee, or anyone in the Vedic culture, is a way to engage one's material desires so that they can be purified and you can come to the position of being completely detached from the material position so you can go back to Godhead. Right? So, if that is generated, then there's some value in it. Right? But if it's just a matter of this is trouble, you give that up for something else, then there's no meaning. Like that. You know what it says? Because it doesn't take you forward spiritually. Is that so? Yeah. 47. The greater lesson of greater blessing of detachment from opulence is described by Srila Prabhupada in his purport. In this verse, the word Maho Dayo Dayat indicates that by the blessings of a great soul, one becomes materially opulent. But one gives up attachment to material wealth, that should be considered an even greater blessing from the great souls. It was not a very easy task for the king to give up his opulent kingdom and young, faithful wife. So you see here, she was a good wife. Right? It's just that she had the quality of her father. That's all. But it was certainly a great blessing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he could give up the attachment and go out to the forest without being seen by anyone. Right? So, not being seen by anyone, we just think, okay, he snuck out, that's good. But the point is it's not that he's... It's one thing if someone's sneaking off because they're going to some other arrangement. That's one thing. But here, he's leaving and that's it. So that means you're going to leave without, you know, saying goodbye to everybody and this and that and, you know, all the closure and all these different things that is necessary and all that kind of stuff. So that means they're that detachment is complete. So then they can just go without anyone even knowing.
So can we say technically it would be called more sannyas than vanaprastha?
Because they'll live a lifestyle like that of a vanaprastha. You know, sitting, doing austerity and stuff like that. He won't travel, preach, and stuff like that. But it's basically the same position. Just one's more on renunciation, the other's more on indifference. Right? Because if you're in the forest, you can just be renounced. But if you're moving around, you're going to be in environments that are like the forest or that are pleasant. Like Narad Muni comes to the palace, you know, to preach to Yudhishthir Maharaj. Now, what's the reception going to be like? Yes. So, for him, it doesn't matter. He can be there, or he can be visiting Magrari the hunter, where it'll be something very simple, or he's visiting his disciple, the king cobra. you know, which, you know, there's probably, other than, you know, getting a nod of the head and maybe a rock to sit on, that's about all the farther it'll get, you know. Does that make sense? So therefore, there's the need of the indifference. But it generally comes having practiced renunciation. Right? So generally, vanaprastha is there, and then from that, there's sannyas. But one can just skip ashrams. Therefore, you see, brahmacharis can go straight into grihastha. I mean, excuse me, they go straight into sannyas. Very rare you see that they will go into vanaprastha and sannyas. So sometimes they do go into vanaprastha. Sometimes you see like these senior brahmacharis, they're more like vanaprasthas than they are brahmacharis. It means they're a brahmachari. Means they're like a vanaprastha without a wife, but they're a senior, they're more independent, they have their own facilities, they have their own programs. So they're almost like vanaprastha. They have that kind of social respect of a vanaprastha as opposed to just a brahmachari. Does that make sense? But at the same time as the brahmacharis, because they're still working under their authorities and things like that. Well, the vanaprastha, he's independent, he's not under authority as such. Right? He's a spiritual master, supreme lord, like that, but not that he has a managing authority. So that's what makes him brahmacharis. But so the point is those three ashrams, then they're more interchangeable. But to get to them from brahmachari to the other side, you don't have to go through grihastha. You can. It's generally the standard, but you don't have to. Like that. If somebody's learned what you would learn as a grihastha, as a brahmachari, then there's no need of grihastha. Right? Then one just moves on to these other ashrams. Yeah. There are many instances of great souls leaving home in this way in the dead of night, giving up attachment for house, wife, and money. And it's not that there's not arrangement. Now he goes off, his wife has facility, she'll be taken care of, and things like that. It's not that he can't pay the bills and he's freaking out, so he just leaves. You know, we're not talking about that.
It's
more than one of us. Huh? Yeah. When it was understood that the king had indifferently left home, right, it wasn't that he had gone off to the forest for a hunt because he just needed some space to himself and all that. So when they understood he indifferently left home, then they know he's gone. Because otherwise, okay, he got upset, he went out for a walk, he's out in the forest, or, you know, he ended up some sage's hermitage, and so he's spending some time there, getting some inspiration, like that. That then the ministers just take care of that way because the king's there, so everything runs in the proper way. But when it was understood the king had indifferently left home, all the citizens, priests, ministers, friends, and people in general were greatly aggrieved. They began to search for him all over the world, just as a less experienced mystic searches out the supersoul within himself. Footnote 6. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the example of the yogi searching for the hidden Paramatma indicates that on that day the king remained secretly somewhere in his own city. Can we explain?
The super soul.
What about super soul?
It searches out the super soul.
Because the inexperienced, they can't find. The inexperienced yogi can't find super soul, even though he's right in his own body. So the citizens are looking for the king, trying to find him and where he might be, but they can't. But as the super, he's still hiding in the city. Because naturally, they're going to look for where he'd be gone. So therefore he hides somewhere in the city where they won't expect he'll be. And then when they give up the search, then he'll... So he's left for the forest doesn't mean he's necessarily gotten to the forest left. Right? Because if he just goes out to the forest, they may be able to find him. Right? Because where do you go? Where there's a nice river or a lake or where the hermitages are, where the other Brahmins are, these are the places so people will find. So therefore he cleverly then hid somewhere where they can't find him in the city, because it's more hard to find someone in the city. Right? And then after that, then he can move out to the forest. When the citizens could not find any trace of the king after searching for him everywhere, they were very disappointed, and they returned to the city, where all the great sages of the country assembled because of the king's absence. With tears in their eyes, the citizens offered respectful obeisances and informed the sages in full detail that they were unable to find the king anywhere, 48 to 49. Special print on the question. Chapter 14. The story of King Vena. It is the duty of the Brahmanas to dethrone a demoniac king and to install a pious one. The Patigyas expressed in the... Patigya, the last chapter. Okay. Sometimes the Lord arranges an unfortunate wife for his devotee so that he makes progress in devotional life. So that we see is that sometimes the material arrangements are such that they're unfortunate, and from that there's frustration, and then therefore then one is able to get very serious about devotional life. But this is not an excuse not to perform one's duties. We're talking about someone becoming very serious. So we're not talking about someone who gives up the family, moves into another comfortable situation, and then just follows his own schedule because he doesn't want to be bothered by the difficulties of family life. We're talking about someone who gives up that whole concept and just moves out into a situation where he's not involved. Does that make sense? So that, the unfortunate situation, then creates that. So here, unfortunate wife doesn't mean that she was a bad wife. It means that her background was such that the nature then generated this difficult situation in the house. Right? So here, it is the duty of Brahmanas to dethrone a demoniac king. Okay, the Pratigya is expressed in the purport to verse 31. Saintly persons are generally very kind to all kinds of living entities, but they are not unhappy when a serpent or a scorpion is killed. It is not good for saintly persons to kill, but they are encouraged to kill demons, who are exactly like serpents and scorpions. Therefore, all the saintly sages decided to kill King Vena, who is so dreadful and dangerous to all human society. We can appreciate the extent to which the saintly sages actually control the king. If the king or government becomes demoniac, it is the duty of saintly persons to upset the government and place it with the deserving persons who follow the orders and instructions of saintly persons. Right? So the saintly persons aren't interested in the management. That's the whole thing of this balance here. The saintly persons are interested that management goes on properly by qualified people. Right? So there's a difference there. Right? Because it's not that like before we see the Burjas, you know. Right? Does that make sense? You have another way of pronouncing it. How do you say it in Europe? Burjas? They were a family that became the popes and everything, and they were a business family, and they controlled the papacy, and therefore controlled all of Europe for, you know, good business and power and everything like that. So it's not like this. That's what happens in these non-Vedic situations, is that they control. But it's supposed to be that, no, is that the saintly persons, they're simply that it should go on properly. So those who are administrators, they should manage. So if the administrators are doing a bad job, then it's pointing out here, it's the business of saintly persons to remove those persons and put in qualified managers. They're not yes men, but they're people who are qualified to follow because they know how to follow authority. Right? If you can't follow authority, no one will follow you. That's the principle. So therefore, the administrators are following the saintly persons who are following God. Right? So the saintly persons are following God, therefore the kings are following them, and therefore the citizens follow the kings. So it works out very nicely. Does that make sense? So they're in no way controlling the government as such by how the management works. They're controlling what's the quality of the government. Does that make sense? So there's a difference there. Chapter 14 summarizes questions and answers. Bahuka, the Nishada, asked the sages the 92nd question. Question 92. Sirs, what shall I do? The sages answered Bahuka's question in the same verse. In verse 25, Vena asked a rhetorical question of the sages. You are so much devoted to the demigods, but who are they? This question does not come under study here, right? Because it was not something. It was not a point. It means we already know, and it wasn't worth explaining it to him. Right? Because his point, who are they? There's me. you know, I'm the thing. So therefore, it's not really a question. That's why he says it's a rhetorical question. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 14th chapter, after being installed as king by the sages, the irreligious Vena is given instructions, killed, and then has his leg churned by the sages. Maitreya Muni tells Vidura that the sages, headed by Bhrigu, with the permission of the queen, Sunita, installed Prince Vena on the throne. After the coronation, the thieves and rogues hid in fear of the fierce new monarch. Right, because the problem is that the citizens are being disturbed because all the rogues and rascals and the thieves are just bothering them, right? But now, one way to adjust that is put a bigger one in place, and it can work, as we discussed before. There was one pirate in the Caribbean, and he was so powerful and so successful that any ship that went down there, if it had anything on it, you know, of value, he captured it and stole everything. Right? And they just could do nothing about it. And somehow or another, sometime they made an effort, they captured him. But instead of killing him, they made him the captain of the Caribbean fleet. Right? He was in charge of all the ports and everything and all, whatever is happening in the Caribbean. So then what happens? All the small-time pirates and everything that are also giving trouble to everybody, he just goes and wipes everything out. And so now it's very peaceful. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of you can take a bigger, rogue and make him in charge. So, but in that position, the natural thing is therefore to be submissive to those who put him in the place. But because of his bad nature, he wasn't, and it became improper. Therefore, you understand? So it's not necessarily an ideal technique. You know, just like, let's say, if you have rough neighborhoods, okay? Now, what's going on in the rough neighborhood? Is it just whimsical that the place is crazy? No, it's very specific how it's crazy, because there'll be some particular gang who has a leader that controls the area. So only stuff that's unfavorable to the gang in that area, then there'll be violence there. Right? Does that make sense? So, but other than that, it won't happen. So no one else can make trouble in that neighborhood. Does that make sense? This means we're getting second round. Let's see, which way is it blowing? Just trying to see if it's blowing. Because they move in a circle, so this way it's going this way, and this is this way. But when this gets around, then this is now it'll be blowing the other way. So sometimes the storm comes, it's blowing from one direction, it's very heavy. Then it stops, it's peaceful because that's the middle of the storm. And then the other side hits, and then it's going the other way. And then sometimes it moves around. You know, so I've seen it where it'll blow from all four sides. It'll blow, stop, blow, and like that. So, after the coronation, the thieves and rogues hid in fear of the fierce new monarch. Thoroughly intoxicated by his royal status, King Vena's pride inflated beyond all check. Right? So it's one thing that inflates up to a particular point, just like Duryodhana's inflated, but not to the point where it was bad for the maintaining the kingdom and protecting the citizens. It was just not a favorable environment necessarily for encouraging Krishna consciousness and pure devotion. But he wasn't opposed to people who were. He just didn't want, a problem with the Pandavas. So it wasn't that anybody who supported the Pandavas he got rid of. Right? Otherwise, then there would have been no one left in the kingdom. So he didn't try that one. Right? Do we understand? So he was intoxicated by royal status and pride inflated, but not beyond all check. So therefore was able to be kept in position. He even insulted great personalities and dared to forbid the performance of sacrifices and other conventional religious observances throughout his kingdom. Right? So if he had just kept all the rogues in check, and he had been very puffed up and very, enjoying spirit, but he kept the peace kingdom peaceful, he still would have been as a value as a king. But You know, and then the individuals, the Brahmins and sages, can go on performing the sacrifices. People can progress in devotional service according to their own practices. But he got in the way of that. So at that point, now he's useless as a king. Because the whole point of the kingdom being peaceful is so that one can perform devotional service. And now he stops that, so then what's the point of his being the king? Greatly concerned, the sages met among themselves to discuss the abominable behavior of the new king. They considered it their duty to hide their anger and try to correct him through pleasingly worded instruction. Right? So that's the first thing you do. If you find that somebody's misbehaving, the first thing is you discuss it and try to work it out. And it says here, pleasingly worded instruction. Because they are in a position of authority and power, so that should be addressed first from that point. Right? He's behaving badly, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have the ability to do the work. It just needs to be corrected. This idea of someone has a fault, throw them out, they're unqualified, they were never, you know, like the Pujari does something stupid, oh, he's never Brahmin in the first place. And this is all modern mumbo jumbo. This has nothing to do with reality. Right? The actual point is no, they have the qualifications, they're doing, something goes wrong, you try to correct what's wrong. If you can't correct what's wrong, then you consider further. But if you just immediately go to you know, this other point, then what's the difference between the sages and Vena? Right? They may be on the side of right, he may be on the side of wrong, but the mentality is exactly the same. So the Vedic, it's about the mentality. It's not just about the structure. The structure is to generate mentality. So if the structure doesn't generate proper mentality, the structure is useless. Right? You're going to have the best managed structure, but if it doesn't generate good qualities in those who are performing the activity, then the structure is a waste of time. Because the whole point is in the material world to develop the qualification to become God conscious. Right? Through the performance of your duties. King Vena's reply was to accuse the sages of being like wives unfaithful to their husband, right? Because he's taking it, he's the supreme authority. But it's actually the sages are the supreme authority. He's the one that's the unfaithful wife, not the sages. Right? He made plain his version of Vedic knowledge. The king is the supreme personality of Godhead. It is everyone's duty to worship him only. In great anger, right? So that's the whole point. Is his point is no, everybody's supposed to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's correct. But it's not that, and the king represents, therefore there's respect, but that doesn't mean he's only representing the Supreme Lord, but he's saying, no, I am the Supreme Lord. So therefore you sages should worship me, right? You can do all your sacrifices, just they should be done to me, that's all. So he's like a small Hiranyakashipu. Very small. In great anger, the sages called for his death. Simply by using high-sounding words, the sages took away Vena's life. The sages returned to their hermitage. The queen, in great bereavement, carefully preserved the body of her son. Soon thereafter, the sages became aware of the spread of lawlessness throughout the kingdom due to the lack of a proper ruler. They were certainly powerful enough to chastise the criminal element, but they considered that an unsuitable duty. It means they could do it, but that's a duty for kings.
It's for emergency.
Yes, but here's, if they can create the king, then if they couldn't, then they will do it themselves. Just like Vishwamitra, he can chastise the demons himself, but he considers that's the king's duty. Christ, they're Brahmins, they're supposed to do the sacrifice. The demons are supposed to be chastised by the king. Therefore, he brings Ram and Lakshman to remove the demons so he can perform the sacrifice. A king was needed to take charge of the realm, and the sages determined that he must be a descendant of the great Maharaj Anga. From the thighs of the preserved body of Anga's son, Vena, the sages churned forth a dark-skinned dwarf named Bahuga. Well, it's a start. Right? So look on her.
Start is only the bed? From the bed?
From the dead.
Not from the bed. From the bed.
From the bed.
So first we get...
from the bad.
Yeah.
Well, generally, is if you're purifying something, the first to come out is the poison. Like they're churning the milk ocean, first comes the poison, then you get all the nectar. So that's the thing. So when you start the devotional process, the first thing that's going to come up is all the impurities, right? And then we see those, and then we think, oh, that's we're like that. But no, that's just the impurities coming up.
But it takes half of our life.
But it's, yes, that's that. But still, half a life's better than many lifetimes. Mm-hmm. Just look at it this way. How long have we been in the material world?
God knows. Only God knows.
Only God knows, and he's not saying, right? Okay. Now, if we've been, just look at it. Even if we've only been here one time, means we started off as Brahma, so that's one lifetime. Right? Then generally after that, then there's, we've been through all 8,400,000 species. So Brahma lasts all the time of the universe, right? Prajapatis also last that. Many of these great sages last like that. So these are all positions. So we've all done that. So that's quite a few lifetimes of Brahma right there. Then as we drop down, then it starts, you know, we can get through the species quite quickly. So we can guarantee we've been around for many lifetimes of Brahma in the material world. Okay? And you're talking about, you're saying half of a human life. So, not bad? Okay. Shloka Anusharana, verse 1 to 12. Vena ascended the throne. 13 to 22, the sages advised King Vena. 23 to 34, the sages killed Vena who tried to imitate Lord Vishnu. 35 to 46, the sages churned Vena's thigh and Nishadaraj Kirata is born. So the Kiratas are in his line of the 12 tribes. We're not talking of Israel, we're talking about the sinful tribes of... Okay. The great sage Maitreya continued. Okay, verses 1 to 12, Vena ascended the throne. O great hero Vidura, the great sages headed by Bhrigu, were always thinking of the welfare of the people in general. Kshema Darshina. When they saw that in the absence of King Anga, there was no one to protect the interests of the people, they understood that without a ruler, the people would become independent and non-regulated. Verse 1, Srila Prabhupada writes, right? So that's the perfection of modern culture, right? Become independent and unregulated. In this verse, the significant word is kshema darshina, which refers to those who are always looking after the welfare of the people in general. All the great sages headed by Bhrigu were always thinking of how to elevate all the people of the universe to the spiritual platform. Indeed, they advised the kings of every planet to rule the people with that ultimate goal of life in mind. The great sages used to advise the head of the state, or the king, and he used to rule the populace in accordance with their instruction. But he's not telling them how to, that the management details means how to, the mechanic means how he should, his management plan and how to affect, they're telling him what is the principles on which management works, right? What are the considerations to, you know, what are the elements of management, what is the plans of management, the attitudes of management, the goals of management, that kind of stuff he tells. Then the actual understanding that, applying it, and that's what the administrators do. After the disappearance of King Anga, there was no one to follow the instructions of the great sages. Consequently, all the citizens became unruly, so much so that they could be compared to animals. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as wolves or jackals killed sheep, so criminals would kill the citizens. As described in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, human society must be divided into four orders according to quality and work. In every society, there must be an intelligent class, administrative class, productive class, and worker class. In modern democracy, these scientific divisions are turned topsy-turvy, and by vote, shudras, or workers, are chosen for administrative posts. Having no knowledge of the ultimate goal of life, such persons whimsically enact laws without knowledge of life's purpose. The result is that no one is happy. The sages then called for the queen mother, Sunita, and with her permission they installed Vena on the throne as master of the world. All the ministers, however, disagreed with this. It was already known that Vena was very severe and cruel. Therefore, as soon as all the thieves and rogues in the state heard of his ascendance to the royal throne, they became very much afraid of him. Indeed, they hid themselves here and there as rats hide themselves from snakes. When the king ascended to the throne, he became all-powerful with 8 kinds of opulences, astavibhutivi. Consequently, he became too proud. By virtue of his false prestige, he considered himself to be greater than anyone. Thus, he began to insult great personalities. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Just a side question. The sages and the ministers, they're not the same?
No. No, these are the sages. So the ministers are those who are working within the state. They're part of the administration. So here the sages are who are outside of that.
So the minister, they're usually the Kshatriyas as well?
Not necessarily. Generally, it means standard would be their Brahmins, but they might be anything. They might be Kshatriyas, they might be Vaishya. It doesn't matter as long as they have the qualification. Like Vidura, he was a minister, but he was technically a Shudra, but he was the prime minister.
But they opposed that the sages...
Because they're looking for the bigger principle, that there needs to be somebody. They oppose that as Vena. I'm sure that they didn't mind the somebody. But it's looking at as, okay, he's the son of the king, and so therefore... But they know him better, that they don't think it'll work.
Ministers.
The ministers. So that's why it's good. They took the permission of the mother, but not of the ministers, and not of the public.
It's only...
Right, so therefore, even though they were... trying to do the right thing, it wasn't following the full system. Otherwise, then they should have brought someone else in. You know, they would have had to look at, you know, some, you know, distant relatives or something. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because there may be, like you saw, there were so many sons of who's before that. This one had 6 sons. Before that, he had 6 sons. Before that, he had 12 sons. So there's going to be lines of cousins, second cousins, third cousins, something that's going to be there. So they could have looked in those areas also, you know, or even brought in somebody from another kingdom altogether, another dynasty, like that. But they thought that it would work. This would work, because in any case, that, you know, they can control it. There's no one expects that he's going to be okay. He's bad, but not necessarily that bad. But now they'll find out he is that bad. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 4. In this verse, the word astavibhutivi means by 8 opulences is very important. The king is supposed to possess 8 kinds of opulences. By dint of mystic yogic practice, kings generally acquire these 8 opulences. These kings were called Rajarshis, kings who were also great sages. Right? So it won't be expressed here, all these things. That will be expressed when Prithu comes, because he is qualified for these 8 siddhis. No. It means he's how you say. He chastises the rogues and rationals like Yamaraj. He wields the authority of power like Indra. He's as pleasing like the moon. He's as tolerant as the earth. So these are all the actual opulences, but they have that power. The position has this power with it. So someone who can handle, then they can manifest it very nicely. Does that make sense? So that's what's supposed to be there. But him having this position and everything, then it just goes to his head. He just becomes proud because he's not qualified. So. By their mystic yogic practice, then they have this. So there may be beyond, they may also have the mystic yogic siddhis also. But in any case, how do you have these qualities unless it's through mystic yoga? Right? And that by yoga only you can develop these qualities. So for the devotees, they develop it by devotional service. They don't necessarily have to use these other processes. Dhruva Maharaj would, because that was the process in that age. So therefore, you use that process, but it's devotional service that makes you successful. So in this age of Samkirtan Yajna, so that's the mystic yogic process by which one develops these qualities. Does that make sense? So that's why then within administration, it's still about your practice of devotional service is what's going to make it work. Right? That's the focus. That's where the main endeavor is. These kings were called Rajarshis, kings who were greater than the greatest and could get whatever they desire. Right? So that comes because of their piety. A Rajarshi could also create a kingdom, bring everyone under his control and rule everyone. These were some of the opulences of a king. Because you start with nothing, but they can generate. Like Yudhishthir, he went out to a place where there were not even any living entities. Right? The place was so desolate. Like that. And from there, generated a kingdom. That's the power of a king. Right? Or what was his name? Chandragupta. He had nothing. Right? He was some kind of Kshatriya, I'm not sure how it worked out, but he was on a boat, he was going out to do something, and the boat had a problem, ended back up on the beach somehow or another, he was alive, and then the ministers found him, and they proceeded from there. Unless I'm mixing him up with another one, whatever it is, but a similar kind of thing. He was just an individual, he had nothing. But he could generate a kingdom. And so then with time, he became emperor of North India. King Vena, however, was not practiced in yoga, but he became very proud of his royal position nonetheless. Because he was not very considerate, he began to misuse his power and insult great personalities. Right? So these are where you get it. If it's coming from the yoga system, then that means that's coming from the sages. So if you disregard the sages, then how will the process work? Right? Pranipatena pati prashna sevaya. That's what we saw before. Dhruva Maharaj had that. That's why it worked. He doesn't have this. Vena, that's why it won't work. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. He became proud because of the eight powers, means he became proud because of possessing wealth from the eight directions. He ruled over the seven continents. He boasted that he himself was a warrior and a scholar, right? Though he didn't have any of those qualifications. Right? So the eight directions, he rules over the eight directions, so over the seven continents. So that was standard. That was emperor of the world meant the seven continents, not emperor of the world meant France and, some part of Italy and a little bit of, Austria and a touch of this and that. And you were the emperor, like that. Or, you had Italy and then you kind of poked your nose out a little bit here and there. Like that. We're not talking like that. We're talking about all seven continents. Amen. When he became overly blind due to his opulences, King Vena mounted a chariot and, like an uncontrolled elephant, began to travel through the kingdom, causing the sky and earth to tremble wherever he went. All the twice-born brahmanas were forbidden henceforth to perform any sacrifice. They were also forbidden to give charity or offer clarified butter. Thus King Vena sounded kettle drums throughout the countryside. In other words, he stopped all kinds of religious rituals. Therefore, all the great sages assembled together and, after observing cruel Vena's atrocities, concluded that a great danger and catastrophe was approaching the people of the world. Because if you stop sacrifice, then everything's going to fall apart. So they could see this happening. So, thus, out of compassion, they began to talk amongst themselves, for they themselves were the performers of the sacrifices. When the great sages consulted one another, they saw that the people were in a dangerous position from both directions. When a fire blazes on both ends of a log, the ants in the middle are in a very dangerous situation. Similarly, at that time, the people in general were in a dangerous position due to an irresponsible king on one side and thieves and rogues on the other. Thinking to save the state from irregularity, the sages began to consider that it was due to political crisis that they made Vena king, although he was not qualified. But alas, now the people were being disturbed by the king himself. Under such circumstances, how could the people be happy? 5-9. Srila Prabhupada explains the function of good government in his purport to verse 9. Okay, time is up. Stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Sama Vekha Bhakti ki, Jai Nitaksh, Gaur Prima, Hare Prabhupada.